previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
Bolt the door. Don't let anyone in. I'll be back as soon as I can.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 114 for the week of April 25th, 2016. I am Dickless Boy Pickpocket David T. Cole. I'm here with Terrible Valerian Sarah D. Bunting.
I want to eat your baby.
Unexpected Spear Joe Reed.
Ow, my skull.
Naked Fornicator Tara Ariano.
Oh, shame yourself.
Poisoned Lannister Jeff Drake.
What's a guy have to do to get some mutton around here?
And Pigeon Pie Connoisseur Nick Rhinewell Jones.
Tastes like sidewalk.
Oh, welcome everybody. If you were thinking that sounds like way too many people in the intro, you are wrong. We have the exact right number of people here to tackle the giant topic that is Game of Thrones, which came back last night as we were recording this. We have on hand to discuss all of this both Nick Rhinewell Jones and Jeff Drake. Welcome back, you guys.
Yay!
Thanks, guys.
That is exactly the amount of enthusiasm that you guys deserve. So this is good.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yes. And now that we are officially no longer beholden to the snooty book readers of the world, do we feel like this is a little bit of a lease on life for Game of Thrones? Does it feel a little bit looser, a little bit more like anything could happen, a little bit more like we're free to maybe put some characters together who were frustratingly isolated for so long? Because that's sort of how I feel like after
are you talking
episode.
About Jon Snow's corpse and Stannis's corpse
together forever, as yeah. they always were meant to be. Yes.
First of all, I would like to say, suck it, Poindexters. go read a menu. No, I enjoy reading things other than menus as well.
No, you don't.
No, you don't. You're right. It's
yeah. Various sugar packets and whatnot.
Exactly. Yeah. This like the yogurts that have kids' jokes on them. I love those. I don't know if I feel like, I mean, having never read the books and not really caring if I read them or not, like I don't know that I've ever like concern myself with are they going to stay close to the book or whatever. So I'm just kind of hoping that I feel like last season took kind of like three episodes or so to like lay the groundwork, and then finally stuff started, like the dominoes started falling. I'm just kind of hoping it sort of feels that same way to me this year, and I'm just hoping it doesn't take quite as long.
Yeah, I feel like what I was mostly referring to, I think, in that intro was the fact that, like, finally Sansa and Brienne have, like, met and sort of got to the place that we figured they were going a year and a half ago. So that in particular felt to me like the TV writers were just like, all right, George, have a seat. We're going to actually get the hell where you were headed. So that, to me, at least, felt like forward motion. And the Dorne stuff, too, where the Dorne stuff felt like, y'all, last year it sucked and we get it, so we're just gonna like off the boring ones and, you know, try our luck with the violent women, which at least is interesting. So
that was a pretty fun moment in my living room. We do not watch the show except when we're talking about it on this here podcast. So
hello, me
like
too.
We're at the, I guess, the Dorne. I don't, that we're always like, it's that guy with the hair and like more grease and less grease, or like how we call it characters.
That's the whole show, basically. Yeah.
So like we get to, and I'm like, oh, it's that guy, Alexander Siddig. I guess the actor's name is, and I always enjoy seeing him, and like literally I was like, oh, it's him. And then he's killed.
It was him.
My husband's like, yeah. Oh. Like, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's the experience I can expect with watching the show.
More or less, yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm just waiting for them to, like, I feel like they're not following Chekhov's rule about showing a dragon in the first act, and then by the third act, that dragon needs to be, like, you need to use the dragon. It may not have been dragons when Chekhov wrote about it. I may... But I mean, I just feel like
it was. Yeah, they made change it.
It was werewolves. I just feel like the Danny character is just like, and even like last season, it was just like, oh, good, she's doing more governing. That's exactly right. What I want to see. And now it's like, oh, great. So now she's going to sit in a house with a bunch of sad ladies. Well, this seems like worth my time to watch, like, that storyline.
It's
Joy
Luck and come all over again.
Only with less joy. Yeah,
it's less luck.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And it's not a club. It's more of an association. But other than that, it's the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean, I just kind of feel like just sort of thinking back, I enjoyed the episode and everything, and I was like thrilled to have the show back on because I look forward to it so much. But like, it just feels like there's just a couple of storylines that really need, like, the Brienne thing is great. Like, I couldn't love that character more, and finally to have her and Sansa like together, and then to have Theon like sort of like, oh, seems like he's going to be kind of an active character too. That's great as well. And they didn't kill Podrick, and so that's great for that group. And then something interesting is going to happen at Castle Black. And I just want him to, like, you know, to me, like, the Dorne thing was kind of interesting, but like, kind of like, well, who cares about Dorne unless they actually attack like King's Landing, and then it's the Martells versus the Lannisters.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, until they activate that, it's like, I don't care how many people in Dorne you kill amongst yourselves, like,
right?
You know, it's,
yeah,
you know, so
it doesn't really work as a self-contained storyline.
Yeah. No.
So I can speak somewhat as a book reader, because between last Yay! Season and this season, I was like, yep. And so I was like,
hey, like once, this bookie once... book.
There it is.
So like when last season ended, I was like, oh, I'm gonna read all the books before the next season starts. And so I did that and was like watching the show, rewatching the show at the same time. I only got through the first three books because, as everyone who has ever read the books will tell you, book four is the most fucking boring book ever written.
Oh, no.
They've barely used any of it on the show for good reason, because most of it is just like people sitting around talking and Brienne literally going door to door asking people if they know where Sansa is.
oh, Jesus.
But
poor Stretch.
But I will say that, like, in reading at least those first three books and rewatching the show, I definitely started to get a feel for, like, when they were going off of the books and when they were just kind of, like, flying by the seat of their pants. And this first episode definitely had a lot of seat of pants feel, especially with, like, Tyrion and Varys just kind of, like, walking around vamping. Like, do we have a script here? I don't know. Like, what are we supposed to be doing? And I feel like there's a lot more like meta humor about the world than there used to be, because it's kind of like the writers taking more ownership of it, which it could be a good thing, but I don't know. Sometimes it rang a little bit weird to me. But
I tend to like scenes like that just because I like a character like Varys so much, and it feels like there's not enough actual like story. Like, he's not a big enough presence in the story, in the main story yet. So.
Yeah,
more of him just sort of like apologizing for Tyrion's bad Valyrian, like, that's fine.
Can we talk about old reptile skin though for a second?
Sure.
Oh, yeah, we sort of buried the crone a little bit,
because that was like, I mean, again, no idea what's going on. So stuff like that is useful to someone like me and Dan, who is like never watches the show, is half watching it and also like looking at whatever puppy videos on his computer.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, wait, so that guy has a skin condition? I'm like, I think that's what we're supposed to.
Oh yeah, he's slowly turning into a stone monster.
But is it always like, for regular watchers of the show, that seemed like that would be really annoying, that it was like, draw a back sleeve, stare at it real hard, that dude who fucked Connie what's her face on Nashville a couple
like times
doesn't
times
seem to notice
show.
Anything.
Yeah, it's sort of the periodic check-in on his arm and on his grayscale, and just like, well, it's progressing way too much for anyone's comfort, but yeah, he'll be a stone monster soon.
Yeah.
Which is too bad, really.
Bad?
Yeah, yeah, because then you just, bad things happen. They have to send you away to an island. He'll be,
dear
it's
mother,
basically, it's
doing well in here outlying land. One That's thing, slowly turning into stone monsters, your loving son, sir, whatever.
That's what happened to Carrie. Yeah.
Please seam the enclosed lanyard. Do not touch lanyard.
Fruity taste, some stone monsters.
We have fun. Game of Stones.
Yes, pretty much. Game of Crones, too, though, as I brought up, though. Sorry, yes, Dave. No, I wanted to talk about Melisandre being an old-ass creepy witch lady, but yes.
Yeah.
That was very Shining inspired, I felt.
Oh, really? In what way? In the you've always been here Shining kind of way?
No, the like beautiful woman that then is all of a sudden like a hideous. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
I assume that is ultimately from either from one of the books or from one of the books that hasn't been written yet, because that seems like that would be like a pretty big leap for them to make that was non-canonical.
Yeah, from what I've heard from book readers, they've said that it's been alluded to that she's older than she presents, and that someone got some quote from something that said she's 100 years old, and or at least 100 years old. But I don't think they've gotten to the point in the book where they like had the scene that we saw last night. So I'm assuming that's in an upcoming book.
Right, but she's let's be honest, guys. She's still got it. I mean,
that look into that mirror was basically communicating was just like
she's like, "Ow, ow." Girl, get it, girl.
Yes, crone.
I just like the idea that just like that's how she goes to bed every night, and this is the first time we've been like
it's just like putting her retainer in or whatever.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
No one's gonna see her. She's got the big bear blanket over her. Like, it's fine. Yeah. Knock before you enter is basically Melisandre's rule, and it's like that for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah, completely.
But now I feel like her character used to piss me off so much, partially for reasons that were probably good, in that she was probably supposed to be, at the very least, like, you know, irksome to somebody like Sir Davos, or like, you know, she birthed the shadow baby that killed poor Renly. But like, now I feel like now that her like faith has been shaken in a way, it's a lot. It's sort of like describing soap opera plot lines to people who don't watch a soap opera.
Yeah.
And they're just like, wow, okay, twins, huh?
A brain transplant.
Yeah. But now that her faith has been shaken because of everything that's happened with Stannis, like, and that she's somewhat like, I don't know, like she's regretful in a way that like, oh, wow, I burned that poor little girl for no reason. And you didn't really think that she had capacity for things like self-reflection before, and like that all of a sudden now she seems like a person, and this seemed like the right time then to sort of like show her at her like absolutely most human. And then if we can go from that to like resurrecting Jon Snow maybe next week, that would also be
Have to do that so that, you know, that seems like a good idea to bring back the character everybody loves, right?
You can certainly understand why she's showing off her boobs all the time, because she's like, hey, I'm 100 years old. Come on, this is pretty good, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just glad they didn't cast Betty White for that part, because you
know. as per usual.
It's like Beetlejuice. I mean, now you're going to have summoned it. Good job.
Yeah. I just kind of figured it out as we were talking. Like, I just feel like there's a little bit of a lack of like, what exactly do these characters want right now? Like, what does Dany want? Like, she just like right now it just seems like, I don't want to go to Crone House, like, and be part of the real world Crone Village or whatever, you know? And, you know, it's just like any of these characters, like Sir Davos is like, well, I don't want to die at, you know, here at Castle Black. And then Alistair, who's like, killed Jon Snow. It's like, well, what's his end game? Oh, just the status quo? Like, it seems like something needs to threaten the status quo.
That's kind of what it seems like. It does seem like some of the plot lines are like a little bit vamping and kind of like waiting for like, okay, are we going to figure out something better to do here then? Although to be fair, if Dany goes to the Dash Killeen, I hear they have a pretty good in-house R&B band called Crony Crony Crony.
Okay, but like speaking like,
good night, everybody.
Though,
why are you just trying to blow past that joke? Come on now.
It's pretty good. I don't want to linger on it, because the more you think about it, the more then it just like will bum you out.
But
like, the Khals can't die that old, right? Like, they all, like, they're, you know, war-having people.
That guy's
so, like,
old, so, like,
so it'll end up being a little bit more like the Real Housewives of Vias Dothrak, right? So, like, well, if it's if that situation, I might watch an episode or two of just that, especially if they change up the opening credits in a way that reflects Real Housewives style openings. Just think about it.
Well, at first I thought that they weren't really going to let Danny get all the way there, but now that I think of it, like, maybe they'll have a plot line where she, like, you know, incites a rebellion among the crones, and then they all, like, come back to take over, like, the Dothraki or Marine or whatever.
Just she gets really mad that somebody
crone attack.
So long as nobody ruins her white party by bringing up something at the exact wrong time.
G.I. Crone is there. G.I. Crone.
I have a question about that whole scene, and I have a bad memory, so I don't remember what happened at the end of last season. If she just met the Horde at the end of last season. That was it, right?
Correct. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So at what point did she think, you know what? I'm not going to say who I am until I'm really far away from where I want to be.
And minutes from being raped.
Yeah. And then she's like, it just all came out.
It was just,
I too like to live dangerously, says Daenerys.
Yeah, that was like a little unbelievable. Like, you know what? Well, before you take me away, I am like a former like bigwig in your community. So if you don't mind, just leave me here. I got a city to rule.
Well, and also, if she just sort of like wasted a little time with them on the hill there, maybe her like giant shitty dragon could come back and defend her instead of just like piecing out the way it always does.
And who's thinking
like
about
dragons
the
shepherds?
Every season, sheep melted, bones everywhere. What's happening to the sheep economy in this area?
Yeah, well.
Well, they did have that scene a little bit last year where it was just like, Daenerys, you got to do something about your fucking dragon because we're not going to have any sheep at the end of the season.
Yeah, or children, but mostly sheep.
Yeah.
Right. Listen, children aren't bringing in any money. The sheep are at least paying for this marine economy.
Joe has a very good point there. Has a very good anti-child point.
All right, what about blind girl?
I have all the very good anti-child points.
What about little blind girl? These are the character names I call
her. As I alluded to in my particle, I think there's a solid chance that it's just going to turn out to be another one of her trials and she's going to get her eyes back.
She's going to get her sight back at some point, but I just don't like, I don't care about Arya. Fuck Arya.
What?
Yeah, Joe. I don't like Arya. Arya sucks.
Oh, Joe. Boy.
I'm sorry.
We'll have to have this discussion offline.
This message was not endorsed by me.
I don't like her either, but I don't watch the show, so what do I know?
No, everybody who read the books really loves her. I'm a Sansa person. Sansa forever. Sansa over Arya.
You don't have to choose.
Team Waze.
They're both
it's a TV show. You get to watch it all.
They're both
sisters.
Stark.
You have to prefer one over the other. Tara has a sister. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Happy birthday to my sister, by the way.
Tara definitely knows as the second favorite Ariana that all of it is just sort of like right now it's just kind of like the setting things up stage and you know, I mean I was glad that the killing continued.
Yeah,
you know,
really
the first episode.
It was a very efficient episode death wise.
Yeah, I mean so and I, you know, I like that, you know, we get to see that like, oh, Brienne, like the thing I liked about back to Brienne is like the fight that she had, like it's not like, oh, she's like, it's not like she's just an unstoppable killing machine. It looked hard, you know? Oh,
yeah. Right.
Like she kept getting knocked down and kicked in the face and stuff, but it was just like, that's one of the things I like about the show is like, they don't make it look easy to fight people in armor. You're fighting, you're wearing all this armor. Like
those swords have
tiring.
Some weight to them. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just hoping, you know, I know that there's going to be a lot of crazy shit that goes down. It always happens. Like, I'm just hoping, you know, that like, all I could think last night is like, this is an example of an episode from the season that the writers themselves think has no like slow or down episodes. You know, they think that this is like the best season yet. So hopefully it takes less time to ramp up because they have a lot of great characters that last night just weren't being used as well as they could. Like Tyrion and Varys are so great together, but like, who cares about Meereen anymore? Good Lord.
Yeah.
Get us out of there.
Well, it did seem like we saw the last of it because it was busy being on fire and all. So,
yeah. But do we know, Do we know if they have to send like a direwolf to Martin's house to be like, is it okay if we diverge in this way, or you know, what is happening at this point with blah blah blah?
Like, they've been fairly vague about it. They've said sort of that they have a sense of where he's going, but there is no obligation on their part to even like do what he tells them to do at this point.
Right. So. Well, I mean, he had his chance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They've already been diverging for like the last few seasons, like starting in minor ways and then getting to major ways. So like, it's not like, like even if they were going to try to follow the next book, there would be a lot of things they just can't use because of what they've already like painted themselves into.
Right. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, next week, little boy who can't walk rejoins the game.
Tara's favorite character name from the very beginning of the show, Bran Stark. Bran. Yeah. Could not. There was a never ending stream of like Bran.
Well, he flaked out on all last season, so he's gonna be back. Oh, wow.
Well, it's nice that they're raising the profile of his character.
I'm disgusted by all of us. Please visit previously.tv to see
for the hot two scoops on Game of Thrones
from both Jeff Drake and Nick Rodwell Jones every week this season.
Follow all the plot movements.
All right. I just want to remind everybody that you can buy an ad on this very program. And a gentle reminder, now that the subject's come up, that raisins are the official fruit of this podcast. Yeah. Until
yes.
we're told
oh my God,
otherwise
please,
through
someone.
Through it an ad. You can buy an ad if you go to previously.tv/ads, $50 for a personal ad, $100 for a business ad. We can write it for you, we can do the work, or you can send us something. It's your choice. Talk to me, we'll figure it out. All right, it is time to go around the dial, and our first stop, Tara Ariano.
I just wanted to say a brief thing about the end of season two of Better Call Saul, which was last week. It was so good. I was so scared when this show started last season that it wasn't going to be good. I loved Breaking Bad so much. And so I thought there's so much danger for a spinoff to be not great. And I thought this season was just as good as season one. A huge amount of development in Kim's character in particular. And I love the way the show developed her relationship with Jimmy and how it sort of it yawed back and forth. Who was, well, I mean, he was always into it, but you know, how much she was into it and the things that he did to protect her and to advance her career and how they supported each other and, you know, ending sort of the way season one did, which is with, you know, Chuck being a giant scumbag, was also felt very true and very devastating. And the way that they shot that final scene was indelible. I'm still thinking about it a week later. So Better Call Saul, you heard it here first. Good show.
That show is so deliberate with those kind of scenes, like the flip, you know, like the flashy lawyer dress up montage from a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Where they just took like 3 or 4 minutes out of a show, like a good 10% of the show, to set that up.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, when they take their time with those and they do storytelling without dialogue, it's amazing. Like, the show is so good at it.
Yeah, I remember reading something around the time of Breaking Bad that like it was sort of a point of pride for the writers to like try and get a scene across with as little dialogue as possible. And that's still true. I mean, more so in the Mike's storyline, obviously, which was really took a backseat this season. But yeah, I'm curious.
Unless you count sighing as dialogue, in which case.
Well, he does speak volumes with his sighs for sure. He was interesting too, but like that, there was not very much of it past the first couple of episodes. They're really slow playing that storyline for sure. But yeah, it was another amazing season, and season three can't come soon enough, especially if the rumors are true that as the first letter of every episode of season two spells out, Fring's back. Not confirmed that he will be in season three, but boy, I'm really hopeful. It came up apparently in Talking Saul, which I don't watch because I'm fucking normal, but apparently they said he has not signed, Giancarlo Esposito has not signed for season three yet, so I hope it's not like an end of the X-Files thing where it's like, Fox Mulder was just here, we went to the dry cleaner. So if he actually is back, I hope he's back, but you know.
It would be a shame if he was just on the Fringas. of this show.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Go sit in the yard.
I take that back. I'm sorry.
Forgiveness, please.
For my plug, I would like to direct you to the, again with this podcast, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. We are now into season 4, the final Brenda year. The stakes have never been higher. That's not true. Stakes have never been college year. We're also, therefore, quickly coming to the end of our excerpts from the I Hate Brenda book, Shannon Doherty Exposed, and you don't want to miss those. So please subscribe.
And I think on our latest episode, didn't Brandon just solve rape culture?
He sure
issues?
Did.
Yeah.
Sure so, did.
Ah, Brandon.
Next up, Jeff Drake.
Hello.
Hi.
Do you guys?
Hi.
Hi. I'm slow playing the beginning. Do you know of this thing called Netflix where you can watch TV shows on it? Because I have this weird friend who I said, hey, do you watch this show and this show and this show? And he said, no, I've never heard of them. I said, they're on Netflix. He was like, we don't watch anything on Netflix. I was like, you're a monster. Because if you look, you have to have Netflix. And if you have Netflix, you have to watch Happy Valley, especially season 2 is just not too long ago came out. And you should watch the whole thing. There's only 6 episodes per series, and it's this amazing show. First of all, it's not really happy in this valley at all. Let me warn
what?
You.
But it is a valley.
It is a valley.
Okay.
It's more of a plateau.
An emotional valley.
It is a very I think the second season isn't nearly as bleak as the first, but the first season is definitely bleak. Second season is still great. It's about this police, what is she, a sergeant? I forget what
Constable.
She is.
Detective Inspector.
Detective Inspector, that's right. Catherine Kaywood, in basically kind of a small town in rural England. And it's just, I mean, really, honestly, the less you know about it, the better. If you haven't seen series 1, definitely watch that first because it's amazing. And then proceed on to series 2, which is just every bit as good in a lot of different ways. It's this amazing. I feel like you know, because they're kind of doing this with The Night Manager is only like 6 episodes, right? Am I right about that on AMC? Yeah, and I feel like when I was growing up, like there were always like mini series, like every summer, like, you know, Roots or Rich Man, Poor Man or stuff like this. And I feel like now it's just like they're not really called mini series anymore. Like British TV just automatically does like smaller orders of it. And the just sort of like the compactness of that season is just so cool and amazing, and the cast is just ridiculously good, especially Sarah Lancashire, who plays the main character. She's just one of the most amazing characters, you know, like, just like, there's no way you would ever recreate this character on American television, because she would be, first of all, they would never cast somebody who was even remotely right for it. It would be like Kim Raver or something, you know?
Oh, no.
Like, well, yeah, you this know, is and, like when they tried to do, what's it called?
Miss Martin.
Prime Suspect.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right.
Which actually was better than it was given credit for, but that was a classic example of like, here's Maria Bello, who looks like an actress.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but and this is very much cut from the same cloth as the British version of Prime Suspect, where it's just like the character is so interesting and conflicted and like really faces some really interesting moral choices because of like things that have happened in her life. It's a really, really great show. Like, I can't recommend it enough, although you are in for some bleak viewing at times. So, but Happy Valley on Netflix, especially series 2.
And Jeff, you are continuing Blackie and Bitey. Yes?
Yes, I am indeed. Yeah.
So they are the crows from Game of Thrones, and each week they discuss all the houses of Westeros and their standing from the viewpoint of ravens.
Yes, exactly.
It's important work, and we thank you
agreed.
For it.
It is.
Agreed.
It is. The Lord's work.
Nick Reidwell-Jones.
Okay, so I have watched the first couple episodes of the new Fox/British co-production quote-unquote miniseries, Houdini and Doyle. And but I was, you know, Tara let me know that this was available, and I was like, oh, that sounds kind of interesting. And it's got Stephen Mangan from Episodes playing Arthur Conan Doyle, and Michael Weston, who was the guy that Zach Braff used to put in everything because he was his buddy, plays Houdini. And
deal breaker, that guy. Absolute deal breaker.
And you know, it seemed like the kind of show that could be pretty interesting. Like it's the two of them being buddies and solving mysteries one hug at a time. But the execution is definitely like as like flat and generic of a Fox procedural as you've ever seen in your life. You could just put two random names in front of these guys and it would be exactly the same. I mean, Houdini gets to pick locks sometimes, which is basically like his only character trait.
But how?
Doyle, Arthur Conan Doyle is like the least interesting, like, procedural character I've seen in a while, because like the thing that's interesting about him is he created Sherlock Holmes, and we pick him up at the time where he's like, oh, I regret that I ever created Sherlock Holmes, I just hate life, my wife's in a coma, blah blah blah. But also for some reason he really wants to prove the existence of the supernatural, so it's like the X-Files, except the believer is the sourpuss.
That was actually true of him in life though, which is like, I don't know why you would base like a procedural around that character beat of this actual person, which is actually kind of pathetic. And it's like the last seasons of the X-Files, like, please just forget these ever existed.
So it you know, and they're calling it a miniseries, but like it is not a miniseries the way that any of us would rationally refer to a miniseries, because like I've watched the first two episodes, and like the first episode sets up the premise, the second episode is like, okay, let's just do this all again. It is clearly meant to be like a, you know, 1,000 episode syndication.
It's an under the dome
show.
Style, we're gonna pretend it's a miniseries until we get picked
up.
Yeah,
it is clearly a backdoor actual series for sure, and I'm sure they will do like as many episodes as possible, and I'm sure plenty of our in-laws will watch them, but It is. I will have a new show fact sheet about it next week, but for now, just my snap judgment of it is it is, like I said, as good as the most average procedural out there.
You would like to make it disappear?
Yes, I would. And I will plug once again my podcast, Making the Sausage, which is a exploration into the world of television and the people who make it. I have an upcoming guest that you might be familiar with, who might be sitting across the table from me right now.
What? Oh, he sounds terrible.
So stay tuned for that. We will not have, unfortunately.
Your dog? What kind of amateur outfit is this?
Hey, Charlie does some good work out there.
Sure does.
But there unfortunately is not a new episode this Wednesday when there normally would be one, but I will have one the following Wednesday, and I have several more racked up, so... should be some interesting stuff coming down the pike.
And we won't get into it, but let me just say, Nick has a really good excuse why. All right, joke.
So not only Game of Thrones came back last night, but the comedy duo of Veep and Silicon Valley followed close by. So Veep, I still love, of course. The major development on Veep that I do need to mention is they've started allowing some gray to fleck into Dan Egan's hair. And it's doing some stuff. Like, there's just the slight salt and peppering, and I'm not currently seeing a therapist, but I may have to, like, get one to, like, work through everything that I'm going to have to work through now that Dan Egan is looking, like, somehow hotter. I can't imagine how that was ever possible. Anyway, I'm here to talk about Silicon Valley, which is, like, improbably maybe my favorite show on television, which is... insane given how much I thought I would hate the show. And I remember I even like watched the first episode and was just like, these guys all seem like jerks, I'm not gonna like the show, stupid tech bros.
Me too.
But like, it's so good, it's so funny, it made me like guffaw out loud twice before the opening credits, like in last night's season premiere. It was so good. The actors are so incredibly likable and funny, and likable at being dicks, which is like, people seem to think that's easier than it is, and a lot more people try it than should, because it is, you just end up act like seeming like a dick like 9 times out of 10. This is the 10th time. Everybody's really good. never like TJ Miller as much as I like him in this thing. Like, I generally find him like really aggravating, but he's so incredibly good. Thomas Middleditch like threads the needle of this character that should be unwatchably pathetic, but he's so likable. And so like, there's just this like core of sweetness in him that makes you really want to root for him. And it's just this like tiny little miracle of a show. And I really do love it. And I'm hoping, like, comedy is tough to stay at a certain level of quality for over a long stretch. So like, I'm, you know, it probably won't stay this great forever, but like, as long as it lasts, I'm going to be totally with it, because it's really super and everybody should watch it. So
I also appreciate the way they, sorry, I just wanted to add
to what you said.
I love the way that they write themselves into corners plot-wise.
Yes, and then constantly, have to, like, constantly.
Yeah, to complicate their lives. It's like the exact opposite of what everyone complained about with Entourage, a superficially similar show in very few ways. But like Silicon Valley is not scared to really throw up roadblocks for its characters and then have to come up with novel ways to get them out of shit, which I like. It makes it funny, and it's also interestingly complex.
It's funny, but this season there are some parallels to real world events that have happened to me personally at big corporations and people making promises about your roles and then things happening and then blah, blah, blah. That is like, oh boy, I know that feeling. Ugh, it was like a twist of the knife, but it's really funny. But it's really, really true.
Yep. Yeah, and Stephen Tobolowsky's on this season, so it's like even better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to throw out there that every time I watch it, I fall in love with the Jared character.
Oh my god,
again.
He's the best. Zach
literally.
Woods. Oh my god.
He's literally maybe the best character on television.
I agree.
And his name isn't even Jared, it's Donald.
I know.
And that's the best part, is that they still call him Jared and he still lets them. And like, I love him so much that I saw him in the lobby at a movie theater and I could not stop myself from going up and being like, I love you on Silicon Valley.
He's it's that like salty and sweet thing too, where like most of the characters in that group are so like always dicks to each other, and he's so optimistic and sort of like really believes in them as a team. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's genius.
He's the best. So for my plugs, decider.com, go over there, check it out. I write for them every day. They pay me and everything. It's really quite something. Also, if you want to sort of see me, my thoughts on movies in snippet Tumblr form, and who wouldn't really? I've done this really dumb thing and said that I was going to watch 366 movies over the course of 2016 because it's a leap year, so there's an extra day. I'm probably not going to hit that number, but you can watch me flail and try. If you go to 366movies.tumblr.com, all written out words, no numbers for this guy. I'm at like 56. I'm 2 months behind. It's going to be a shit show, but like, I watch more movies than most people.
In December.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It'll be great. Yeah. My holidays are going to be wonderful. It's very sort of, it's low stakes because like they're not going to throw me in jail if I don't get it. So it's totally fine.
That's what you think. Well,
oh, aren't they?
But it's
Tumblr jail.
It lets me sort of talk about the kinds
also
of
known
movies.
As Tumblr.
Yes, exactly. It lets me sort of talk about the kinds of movies that like aren't, you know, maybe not interesting enough, or like I don't have a full enough like thing to get a whole article about, but like I saw The Fly for the first time last week and like that was super weird. So I don't know. 366movies.tumblr.com, check it out.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello. I'm here to talk about Project Runway All-Stars. WTF. Here's the weird thing about this show. I like it better than Project Runway Mothership at this point, because it seems like they're a little more in touch with like what made the original franchise good, or at least they're a little more in touch with like, they're a little more open about the compromises that they're making in order to make it TV versus actually like caring about the design. But the most recent results were unacceptable, including to Sam, who stayed when Emily went home. And he's like, I don't know why I'm here. But, you know, I don't this is the point at which I was like, I can no longer sort of like not believe in this franchise, but I don't know. Like, there was something really disappointing about it, and it's not like I'm naive about reality TV, but that was just like, really, on this show? Like, it's all stars. Why not just have it be merit-based instead of drama-based? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I wish they had just turned to the camera and been like, Sam causes problems, so we're keeping him. Then I would have had more respect for that decision. And I like him more than most people.
Well, you would think that if it's an all-star season, like, that they're already picking, like, they can handpick their best cast anyway. Why not just handpick a cast where you don't have to care what order they go home, because they're all good. You know what I mean? Like, they're all good TV.
Yeah, but they're not necessarily, like, the best designer left is the most, like, easygoing and mellow, and it's not going to cause any problems.
Yeah.
Like, she has great hair, but that's the only like, TV thing she's doing.
Yeah.
I'm still not over the fact that he's not actually a Project Runway alumnus. Sorry. He's from that under the gun horseshit. Like,
they're doing, like, the challenge does that now. It's such horseshit. Yeah.
Yeah. He has agreed to do an interview with us. I hope that will still be true. It might be a few weeks, but I mean, yeah, he feels ways about things, and I think,
yeah,
we'll say so, probably to his own detriment, but go Sam. My plug, I was going to plug a show that is returning as we record this. It will have returned last night, Monday night. But I actually don't want anyone to watch it or read my coverage so that we can just cancel it off the site, because I'm kind of mad that they even renewed it, because it's boring. Rhymes with burn, which is what I just did to it. So instead, I am going to plug my new-ish podcast, Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. The Mark is Mark Blankenship, frequent guest, and we had our very first guest on the most recent episode. We talked about Mazzy Star, and Joe Reed very nicely joined us
to
talk about that and many, many modern rock hits of the mid-90s and those little snippety sub-2-minute songs that you had to put on the end of the mixtape to fill it out. We would love to hear from you about the songs that you used for that. I used Toad the Wet Sprocket because I'm history's greatest monster. Tweet at us at Talk Songs about your favorite mixtape, end of side A, tools.
All right. I have two ads from the 80s, 90s, I think early 90s. Here we go. Ads about things people want to know.
Read about tennis tots, political posters, and the miniseries Shogun, all in the new issue of TV Guide magazine.
All together? Finally, at last. Thanks, TV Guide.
Shogun?
Has Wayne Newton split with his wife and hit the jackpot with his new romance? Inquiring minds want to know.
I want to know.
Can you lose weight by switching from celery to sweets? This week's National Enquirer tells you. How can you put office troublemakers in their place? What curse of death and disaster haunts the Super Bowl?
It's in the Enquirer.
What bizarre surprises popped up on Caroline's wacky honeymoon? Find out in the Enquirer. Over 100 features for people with inquiring minds.
Like me.
Why don't they do these weekly, timely ads like that anymore? That's fantastic. And you have to see the ad because it's so, like, early first-gen computer effects. Like the death haunting the Super Bowl thing. There's this, the guy opens up the locker room. There's a skeleton. And then there's, like, in a football uniniform and a helmet. And then the jock's like, inquiring minds want to know. It is amazing. And there's got to be more out there. So I'm going to see if I can hunt down a few more of those because it is fantastic. For my plug, I just want to give an update on the Derby names from last week. Thank you so much for all your suggestions. There are some great ones. I got it down into two camps. So basically I had photo suggestions, photographer suggestions, and I have Canada suggestions. So the candidates are Cannonball with one N, as I mentioned before, Photo Finisher, Shutter Down, F-Stomp, and Slay Cheese for the photographer ones.
Sure. I like that
Canadian
one. Ones
are Canada Whoopass, which is pretty good. And Maple Grief, which I liked a lot.
I love that.
These ones are not in consideration because I don't want to use a first name that's not mine. I think that's confusing. But I will say these are great names. If you're out there, you're a Canadian Derby. If your name's John Griefenbaker, it's a good one. If your name's Donald Smotherland.
Yeah.
Lester P. Fearson.
Yeah.
And my absolute favorite, Mordecai Stitchler.
That is
fantastic. So if you have any more suggestions, throw them in the comments. But I think I will have made a decision by next week's podcast. And another small plug. If you follow me on Instagram or Facebook, you can read along as I go through the A-Team trading cards roughly one day at a time or so.
Recent past guest of this podcast, Danny McEachern, gifted Dave with these when he visited Fort Awesome Hawaii, yeah. Which you also can.
And they are amazing because it basically they just took a whole bunch of photos, both stills from the show and just like press photos they took. And some poor soul had to make up a story, an original story, to go through all these cards. And the story is so tortured and so poorly written. It is amazing. So every day I photo the front and the back. I put them together and I slap them up on Instagram and Facebook. So follow me there. I'm at Glark on either one of those services. All right, everybody, it is time for the canon. Today's canon submission has been sitting in the hopper, get this, for two goddamn years. It is from the very patient Angie, who earns herself an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of her choosing. Okay, Angie, take it away.
Hey, Sarah, Tara, Dave, and valued guest.
That's how long ago it was. Joe gets no mention.
God damn it.
My name is Angie, and I'm submitting 30 Rock Season 4, Episode 10, Black Light Attack for the EHG canon. In the A-plot, Jack is thrilled that Danny will be able to be the male companion he's been longing for. Danny confides that he is having a secret office romance. Jack tells Liz that Danny is famous and will therefore have people wanting to sleep with him, which Liz is cool with as long as Danny's discreet. Jack and Danny discuss Danny's new love interest at a basketball game. A series of his comments about his girl's reluctance to show her feet and her weird underwear convince Jack that Danny's talking about Liz.
All right, so we're getting into it, and she takes off her glasses. Real sexy.
Nice.
But she never takes off her shoes, which I kind of like. Even though the reason is she's never let a man see her feet.
What?
And she's kind of a tease. Mostly we just kiss, and then she makes me go down to the deli to get her a sandwich. So we haven't gone too far. But under that dress, I can tell she's wearing some weird underwear. I want to see it.
They're called Spanx.
Jack confirms this by springing a black light attack on Liz, and that robot paint really doesn't wash off. He tells her to break it off with Danny before it causes problems for TGS. Liz agrees, but changes her mind when she sees Danny in a Chips costume. The rest of this plotline involves Jack and Liz vying for Danny's attentions and affections. Tracy and Jenna have equally good B-plots in this episode. Tracy has just realized that all women, even strippers, are somebody's daughter. He decides to add Sue LaRoche Vanderhout to the entourage in order to learn how to relate to women better. This involves canceling their usual strip club trip in order to do something Sue wants to do. Not that Tracy can understand what that is.
I like to go to Tasty Delight.
I said we're not going to a strip club.
Pinkberry?
Why don't you understand? I don't want to take you to a strip club.
Tracy also notices he's becoming more sensitive about Sue because he's thinking of her like a daughter. Soon, Sue decides to ditch a game night with Tracy and Kenneth in favor of a date with a sketchy guy named Doug. And over in Jenna's plotline, she's been offered an audition for the show Gossip Girl. Jenna, of course, assumes she's auditioning for the role of the college girl and not her mother, leading Liz and Pete to hope they'll be dead by the time she figures out she's wrong. At the audition, Jenna figures out she's supposed to be the mother and predictably loses her mind.
Mother, is there something I don't...
Jenna, you're reading the wrong lines.
What do you mean? I'm not playing the mu...
Back at 30 Rock, Liz tries to convince Jenna to embrace her aging gracefully like Meryl Streep and not go down the terrifying Gollum-armed path of Madonna. Of course, Jenna takes the opposite message of this and spends most of the rest of the episode trying to convince everyone around her that she's a 20-something. Jenna's plotline comes to a head while she's taping her face and singing Forever Young in her dressing room. Liz convinces Jenna to act her own age by promising to bring her friend Tom Selleck to work if Jenna will do it.
Oh my God.
I'd like you all to meet Tom. Tom Selleck. He's my mustache.
Jenna agrees and goes on to die as an ancient 41-year-old woman on Gossip Girl. The Jack and Liz plotlines come to head around the same time as the Tracy plotline does. In a last-ditch bid to keep Danny, Jack tells Danny that he's been in love with Liz Lemon for some time. He has a bit of a hard time selling this when Liz appears with her lush mustache, but Danny agrees to break it off.
I ache for her sexually. How could I not? I'm entranced by those mud-colored eyes set back in that skin, in her laugh, her walk, that splay-footed walk, and that whole situation right there.
Sue returns from her date with Doug looking kind of rough. Tracy tells her their argument was unimportant and then gives her back to Liz Lemon, saying that he thought a nice man would come along for her, but not so soon. Kenneth assures Tracy he'll be a good dad to a daughter, and Liz busts Jack balls for lying about being in love with her. This episode of 30 Rock uses all the main players to their best effects. It also gives screen time to one of my favorite side characters, Sue. The three plot lines tie together neatly, but not in a way that feels forced to me. I also think it's a hilarious episode of television, and I hope you'll vote it into the canon. Thanks.
Thanks, Angie. This episode for me is always the one with Lutzethi dancing in his yes. bra, which he needs to support his breasts.
It's not what you think.
I always forget the rest of it. So it was nice to be able to rewatch it. I will say also that this particular week you have a high barrier to entry that gets us into the canon because we have six people voting and you need a majority, so have fun. Okay, so here are my takeaways. I love Pete. He is my absolute favorite 30 Rock character, and this is a great episode from him. The way he gives up on life at a moment's notice, how everything, you know, the weight of the world is always on him, never fails to amuse me, and he has some great lines in this one. The dynamic I find between Danny and Jack is a little weird. Like, when you compare it, I think it's supposed to be at the start on the level of Jack and Floyd, but I don't think it compares.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't think they have the same chemistry, and it doesn't quite hit right to me. The other knock against this episode for me is I find the Tracy and Sue storyline a little pat and a little sort of A to B to C, see where it's going. And they have hit on the whole, you know, every stripper is somebody's daughter thing on this show a lot. And so I feel like this was another one of those. Not that that's a bad message, but, you know, been there, done that. So for me, I laughed a lot, but I don't think this is up there with the best of 30 Rock's episodes. Tara?
I concur with Dave. Pete is great. When he and Liz are discussing whether they need to deal with Jenna's situation, and Liz says, we might be dead by then. Pete, the way Scott adds it, reads that line, oh, that'd be nice. Like, you really feel that he feels that way. And later when he...
get canceled?
And when he comes up behind Jenna, she's freaking out that she got cast as a mother, and then we just see him in the background, like, turn around and run away.
Yeah.
It's like one of the best Pete moments of the series. I also think the Jenna stuff is like, there's exactly the right amount of it. And when we finally get to see her Gossip Girl / Blade Runner speech about all the wonders that she's seen as a 41-year-old dying of old age is pretty good. But I agree with, and I also like any reference to, especially a subtle one, to how old Kenneth is, because he's like the Melisandre of 30 Rock.
Yes, exactly. Very timely.
Maybe 100, maybe immortal, but he's also very bothered by the app that only people over 40 can hear. But I agree with Dave that, like, 30 Rock is such a good show that it really takes a very special show for me to vote it into the canon. And This one is good, but I always hated when they had to come around to the episode every season where it was like the fake tease that maybe Liz and Jack were ever going to hook up. Like, no one thought that, including the show, but it felt like once a season they had to throw something in. It's like, maybe, like, no one really buys that. And the whole thing of like Liz being horny is like not typical of the show. In fact, it's the opposite of how she normally is. So that stuff was like, it was cute, but I don't know. So A+ for Pete. For the rest, like, solid B-, which is still a very good episode, but like not the best for 30 Rock for me. Joe.
Yeah, I feel like similar to how Dave felt, was not feeling the chemistry between Jack and Danny, I was feeling that with Liz and Danny. That just sort of never quite lands, never quite sits. And it's funny because like her chemistry with, what was the Gay for Jamie, the first season episode where she's dating the younger guy, the one who Frank ends up falling in love with, strangely. Yeah. That works in a way that this episode I don't think does on that level. I feel like there are little parts of this episode that I really like. I like the way Sue sort of screeches, "I'll never be like you," in that sort of like Varsity Blues way that I like. And
the real Mrs. Lutz, I mean, by the Dave way, hit it, like,
what's that?
I said that's the real Mrs. Lutz. That's John Lutz's wife in real life.
No kidding. Well, they both have very good moments because Dave was right. Lutz dancing at the end is the clear highlight of this. And I also like Liz sort of like taunting Jack at the end. I get what you're saying, Tara, about like it was annoying that they had to feel like they had to address the fact that they were never going to Sam and Diane them. And it's just like, we believed you the first few hundred times. But Liz sort of taunting Jack, being like, it started out, it started fake, but now it's become real. Like, that made me laugh. But the whole episode didn't really work for me. The Jenna stuff was my favorite stuff, and which is good, except that's not the sign of a good 30 Rock episode for me. Like, the best 30 Rock episodes, I like everything else so much more than Jenna. So like, when I end up liking the Jenna stuff the best, that's not super great. Although the part where she pretends like she can hear the tone for Only Young People, and then she just goes like, yeah, I don't know, Facebook, what? And it's that was good. I didn't love the sort of aggressively anti-Madonna stuff in that one scene where it just felt like we were getting like Tina Fey's diary entry about how much she hates Madonna. And it's just like, we get it. Like, you find her creepy. Don't give Madonna fans an excuse to feel persecuted, because they will. It just never quite holds together for me. There are a billion 30 Rock episodes I like better than this one. So it's not quite my jam.
Who is next? Sarah.
Oh, who is next? Sarah, why don't you go next?
Pretty much. I was not a regular watcher of the show. I feel like a show as well regarded as this, this should have been funnier. Everything except Jack felt pretty strained to me. There were some good bits in there, and it sort of like gathered steam. So by the end, I was sort of like, oh, maybe. But it was just good for me and not great. I confused Cheyenne Jackson with what's his nuts, Westwick from Actual Gossip.
Oh, and Westwick.
So once I figured out that that was not who it was, then there was like a whole layer of a visual joke that was not
right,
because I am dumb. So that was sort of like, oh, I mean, he was fine.
Yeah,
like, there were some good jokes. I laughed at some things, but like, oh, woman's mustache. Like, I don't, that just seemed like they thought it was way funnier than it actually was. The Tracy subplot, I felt nothing.
Yeah.
I didn't not enjoy it, but this is a no for me. Nick.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much going to echo what you guys have all said. 30 Rock is just such a fantastic show, and there are, yeah, there might be a billion episodes that I like better than this one. It has some good moments. I like the whole montage of Jack trying to take people to the baseball game, and especially Twofer making the very
yes,
valid point
very
about
valid.
About why does anyone go after the what's it called,
the if quaffle?
You can
quaffle.
Get the Golden Stitch. Yeah,
yeah.
Especially because I've just been rereading Harry Potter, and it's like, yeah, the Golden Stitch is the only thing that matters. Like, the rest of the game is meaningless. But I would say, like, a canon-worthy 30 Rock episode is one where there are like 10 unforgettable jokes before the opening credits, And this one I felt like maybe had like five in the entire episode. And the plot lines just felt very like archetypal to me. Like it was like, oh yeah, something to do with Tracy feeling guilt and something to do with Jenna trying to stop raging and, you know, tweaking Liz's romantic stuff a little bit. And I don't know, it didn't feel like it really like, you know, add anything to any of those kind of typical plot lines. And yeah, I totally agree about the like Liz being horny being like non-canonical, because one of the best lines they ever had was when she's with Dennis and Jenna's like, how's the sex? And she's like, fast and only on Saturdays. That was one of the best like lines they ever did for her. And like, this totally like contradicts that. But so yeah, I'd say it's fine, but probably doesn't clear the bar for me.
All right. Take it off home, Jeff.
Well, I have a whole lot of things to say that no one has talked about. No, I don't. Yeah. I mean, I think we're all sort of keyed in to sort of what's essentially true about this episode. I mean, when I read, like, I had no memory of this episode. And even after I read, like, the synopsis of it, I was like, wow, I don't remember it. And then once I started watching it, some of it came back. And it actually was, I thought it was funnier than I was, like, reading the synopsis. I was like, that doesn't sound like a very funny episode. But the synopsis, but then watching it, there was, I mean, the Lutz stuff, like everybody's talked about. Pete, it is just genius in this episode. It does have one of my favorite things ever said, which is like when Jenna talks about attending the Royal Tampa Academy of Dramatic Tricks.
Yeah.
It's like, which is like, it's like a name of something that gets funnier with every word she says.
Yep.
Like every word, royal and then Tampa and then like it's just like an ending on tricks. It's just like, it's probably the best written name of something that I've ever heard.
Yeah.
You know, just tiny things like Jack, like Liz asks Jack, like, how drunk are you? And he says, a lot to vary.
Yeah.
You know, and then like when he's describing how he doesn't like really connect with the other so-called men on the show and he talks about their boneless faces.
Yeah, I wrote that down. I mean, there's too. Just, good.
You know, and then there's something that really stood out to me that was like, there was a joke that was based around Nicolas Sarkozy. And I was like, Who is that again? Like, it was so weird. Like, it took me out of it completely. But, yeah, I mean, I think my basic thing about this is as much as I want to like the Sue character, like, I just don't care about Sue. I would watch an entire episode about Lutz. Like, yes. I mean,
oh, totally.
Lutz is amazing. But Sue just is kind of like, there's no there for me. So, like, it was a funny episode. Like, for me, it was kind of like, oh, that's a solid, like, B, maybe a B minus. But, like, There are definitely episodes like Nick said, like where, you know, like before you even get to the credits, it's like, I feel like I've already watched like the funniest show I've ever seen. So it's just the bar is so high with 30 Rock. The great episodes are so, so very great. So like, you know, so I'm glad I don't have to be the deciding vote with six of us.
Yeah,
I would have felt
like
terrible after two plus years to be like the one who was like, sorry.
All right, so let's put it to a vote. I say nay. Tara?
Nay, but thank you for the submission, Angie, and thank you above all for your patience. I hope you are still listening to this podcast.
Yeah. I've seen her on the forum, so she
okay, good. Phew.
Joe?
Yeah, it's a no for me as well.
Sarah?
Excellent presentation, but it is a no for me.
Nick?
No, but I always love an excuse to watch 30 Rock.
And Jeff?
Yeah. Again, like the presentation, very concise and awesome. And it was a great excuse to watch an episode of 30 Rock, but sorry, it's a no for me too.
Well, that means 30 Rock, Season 4, Episode 10, Black Light Attack. You are not inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon. I'm so sorry. The rare 0 for 6.
Oh, Jesus.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
And just one thing about the 0 for 6. It sort of like makes it sound like it was this totally shit show of an episode. But
no,
it's not at all.
It's
the quality
so good.
Of
yes.
The rest of the show.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Yes. It is time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Nick, who's our winner?
Okay, our winner is Carrie Ann Moss, Sam Palladio, and anyone who has seen Sam Palladio on the many shows where he does a fake American accent and you would like to see what his real British accent sounds like, which is a long way of saying that both of those people have been cast in season 2 of Humans.
Heard of them.
Thank you. It says, Carrie Ann Moss will play Dr. Athena Morrow, a preeminent AI expert who is driven by her own motives to create a new kind of machine consciousness. And Sam Palladio, this sounds like this will be in his wheelhouse, is playing a struggling cafe owner.
Perfect.
Awesome. So I don't even, who knows what he'll have to do with the plot, but in any case, I'm very excited for Human Season 2, and it says we'll have to wait a little bit for it. It won't come back to the U.S. until 2017, but if you're willing to fly to England, you can see it in late 2016.
Nice. Loserly.
Oh, poor Kelly Ripa. So Michael Strahan quit Live with Michael and Kelly last week.
Oh,
and
God.
The next day, she did not show up for work. And this sparked a whole, like, cycle of
gangster.
Yeah. Of, like, you know, some very gendered coverage of, like, is she a diva? And then, you know, the backlash of, like, anyway. It's just none of it is good for her. And from what it sounds like, he, like, quit and no one told her. Like, she read about it in the paper or something, which is shitty. What is up with that show? How is it even a show still? But anyway, so look out for who is going to replace Michael Strahan, and some probably very shameless campaigning by Pat Kiernan, who I love, but seriously, wait for them to call you dude.
Truth.
Speaking about shameless campaigning, that brings up an interesting question. And that is this. Do you know what time it is?
Is it crime time?
Close.
It's not crime time.
It's game
time. Chronos.
All right, everybody. This is the 8th game time of the season. Tara won last week's Do or Die game time, keeping Joe from winning the season. But Joe still has 4 points. Tara only has 3, so Joe is still in the driver's seat. Today we are playing TV Typos from Rob Hartman, who earns himself an extra credit.
Happy birthday last week, Rob Hartman.
Redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. Now, we just played a Rob Hartman game 2 weeks ago, but in honor of him sending this to us on his birthday last week, we're going to move to the top of the queue with our thanks.
This guy.
All right. So Rob asks, who has time to proofread TV listings? No one, that's who. In TV Typos, players must guess the name of a typoed TV show where one letter of the show's title has been changed. Here's an example. Kate Walsh tries to make a pan of chocolate candy, but it just tastes terrible.
Bad fudge?
Bad fudge. Bad fudge.
Oh, I see.
Solid.
Okay. So we have 55 questions. Everybody's going to get 11 questions today. Okay. We'll throw it to Picky to see who's going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. That means it is Jeff, then Nick, Sarah, Tara, Joe. Are we ready to play TV Typos?
Sure.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Jim Parsons has a hypothesis about his one enormous tooth.
The Big Fang Theory.
Oh, this is going to be good.
Nick, I love it already.
Yeah.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus is a stale marshmallow chick.
I knew it.
Peep.
Sarah, Shannon Doherty and Alyssa Milano are burnt to a crisp.
Charred?
Tara.
Yeah.
A Sub-Zero is discovered between El Paso and Juarez.
Juarez?
Thank you. Juarez.
The fridge.
Thank you. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Tom Colicchio?
Colicchio.
Wants to find the best cooking police officer.
Cop chef.
Jeff. Claire Danes plays an angsty teen who lives in a broken down British elevator.
My so-called lift.
My so-called lift. Correct.
Nice.
Nick, Ted Allen needs some Vaseline for his dry, dry lips.
Chapped.
Wow.
To Sarah, celebrities have their boils pierced and drained.
Celebrities have their boils pierced and drained. Oh God. Lancing with the Stars?
Oh my God.
Oh,
oh my God.
Wow. Good pull.
Gross.
Right. Yeah. Bill Paxton goes nuts at the Kate Spade store.
Bill Paxton?
Bill Paxton. Yeah, actually, I'm not sure. I'm going to change this clue a little bit. Okay. Bill Paxton goes nuts at the Coach store.
Bag love? Okay.
Because Kate Spade's like stationary and stuff too, right?
Well, they have kind everything, of. But yes.
Yeah. Okay. Joe, Bryan Cranston leaves his high school teaching job to become a shepherd.
Breaking Bad?
Vibrato. That was very well
Thank
done.
You. Back Thank to you. Craig T. Nelson blows into a large seashell.
God. Oh, God.
Jeff?
Oh, it's me. I'm sorry, I was laughing. Conch.
Oh, shit.
All right, to Nick. After writing Cosmos, Mr. Sagan moves to London's East End, where he rides bicycles and delivers babies.
Oh, Carl the midwife.
Carl.
Holy shit.
Good one. Wow.
That's amazing.
Oh my God.
Tara.
Yeah. No, Sarah.
I mean, sorry, no. Sarah. Yep. For Sarah D. Bunting, droids bake angel food, red velvet, and German chocolate.
Cake bots?
Cake bots? Tara.
Yes.
Now it's your turn.
Yes, it is.
Dana Delaney wonders why she bought this cold, hard porcelain love seat.
China bench.
Correct. China bench.
Oh, wow.
All right, bring us into our first score break for Joe.
Yes.
Edie Falco is a Viking.
Norse Jackie.
All right. I know the scores, so I'm just going to say it. The scores currently are 3 points apiece, right?
Correct.
Yes, everybody. Yes. No wrong answers yet.
I'm impressed and disgusted by all of us, and that includes you, yes.
Okay, all right.
The midwife.
What the fuck?
Here three we go. To three. Jeff.
Yes.
An entire town is trapped.
Oh, no.
An entire town is trapped beneath Judi Dench.
Oh, man.
Oh.
All right, for Jeff, an entire town is trapped beneath Judi Dench.
Under the Dame.
Oh, yeah.
All right, number 17.
Wow. Spread eagle.
For Nick.
Spread eagle.
Heather Locklear buys some china. Heather Locklear buys some china.
Man, all I can think of is Melrose Vase, which would only work if it was a...
Wait,
I want to use my...
Oh, okay.
Dave?
Yep.
Can I use my steel mill?
You can use your steel mill.
Is it Melrose Plate?
Melrose Plate.
Nice.
Be stolen.
Right, to Sarah. In Storybrook, Maine, there lived a silent little man named Marcel Marceau.
Who
no.
has the same birthday as I do? That's Once Upon a Mime.
You are correct. Number 19 for Tara. Mm-hmm. It's a basement where everything is shades of eggshell, ivory, and bone.
White cellar?
White cellar. Correct.
Oh, yeah.
All right, back to Joe. Drew yes. Carey hosts a show about that asshole friend who, damn it, actually has a point. Drew
that
Carey.
Asshole friend.
Yeah, Drew Carey hosts yeah. a show about that asshole friend who, damn it, actually has a point.
That asshole friend.
Anybody?
The Bryce is right? I don't know.
That's
the
not
prick
it.
Is right.
The prick is
the
right.
The prick is right. Jesus.
All right, to Jeff. Lea Michele is slowly submerged in a vat of library paste.
Glue.
Nick, James Spader wrote down what he was supposed to pick up at the store, but somebody erased it.
Oh, the blank list.
Correct. For Sarah, Alex Trebek morphs into a spotted jungle cat.
Oh, leopardy?
Tara.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Donovan helpfully lets you know when he's about to belch.
Burp notice.
Burp. Oh my god.
Oh, would watch 100 times.
All right, Joe. It's a house yeah. full of obnoxious strangers and a hog.
Pig brother.
Pig brother. For yeah. Jeff. Lena Dunham morphs into a carp and breathes underwater.
Gills.
Gills. No. For Nick, Lily Tomlin is best friends with Jane Fonda, who plays a pre-raisin. Raisins, the official fruit of extra hot grape.
Oh, that would be Grape and Frankie.
Back to Sarah. Juliana Margulies personally tests different brands of toilet paper.
Ew. Oh, no. The good wipe.
The good wipe.
Oh, that shit ain't right.
All right, Tara.
Yes.
Meredith Baxter Brinney.
Bernie.
Yep.
Bernie.
And Michael Gross take all their little piggies to market.
Family toes.
All right. Bring us nice. Into our second score break for Joe. Lou Ferrigno yes. is pouty. I mean, really pouty.
Oh my god.
Oh, the Incredible Sulk.
The Incredible Sulk is correct. All right, that was question 30 of 55. Let's hear the scores.
Tiny movement this time. Nick has 5. The rest of us are tied with 6 apiece.
All right. Good game and anybody's game so far. Back to Jeff. Michael C.
Yes.
Hall. Michael C. Hall can't stop messaging on his phone for 1 goddamn minute.
Texter.
For Nick. Rachel Bloom is a large beast of burden who sings.
Okay. Well, okay, I got this.
While you're thinking, I'll read the clue again. Rachel Bloom is a large beast of burden who sings.
Because she has heavy boobs. It's kind of rude to call her a large piece of meat.
All right, we're going to call
her. Nope,
no, there's no steel mills left, right? I don't have to worry
don't
about that anymore.
No.
Nobody has steel
no.
mills, correct?
I nope. No.
Okay.
I know it.
All right, let us know what it is, Jeff.
It is my crazy ox girlfriend.
Of course, ox.
All right, Sarah.
I kept trying to get mule into it.
Michael Sheen and Lizzie Kaplan toodle away in a jazz band. That's for sure.
Masters of Sex?
Masters of Sex, correct. Tara.
Oh, God.
Housewife Lisa deciphers ancient Viking scrolls.
Vanderpump runes?
Vanderpump runes.
Wow. Whoa. Very nice.
All right, for Joe. Linda Carter plays a lady out west who lives over that-a-way.
Yonder woman.
Yonder woman. Jeff. Dylan McDermott and Toni Collette make fart faces while they try to figure out how many stamps go on this damn package they're trying to mail.
Oh, Jesus. It's terrible.
Oh, shit.
Read that again. Dylan McDermott and Toni Collette make fart faces while they try to figure out how many stamps go on this damn package they're trying to mail.
Oh, the United... hold on.
I think there are two possible answers to this, actually.
Well, we'll hear arguments if he gives a different answer.
Wow. I can't think of one where it's just one letter off.
Anybody?
Postages.
I believe you were going for postages.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you could make an argument with just Toni Collette for the United States of Tare. T-A-R-E.
Sure. Oh, nice one. Dylan McDermott isn't right.
Yeah, Dylan McDermott kind of fucks that up, but yeah.
Also, no one watched Postages except for me.
Yeah. All right. Now you know, postages. Rob enjoyed your coverage on Previously Done TV.
Back to Nick. Steven Weber and Tim Daly get all flirty, or maybe they just have something in their eye.
No.
Steven Weber and Tim Daly get all flirty, or maybe they just have something in their eye.
Well, the dirty answer would be wangs, but I'm guessing that's not what we're going for. Winks.
Winks, correct. To Sarah, you guys, Phil Cohagen, just had something.
Kogan.
Hmm?
You guys, Phil Kogan.
Oh, Phil Kogan?
Yes.
Just had some incredible long grain basmati.
Oh, the amazing rice.
Tatara?
Yes.
I lost my place. Tatara?
Yes.
William H. Macy is a formless blob.
Shapeless.
Nice joke. It's an enclosure full of shrewd investors suffering from explosive intestinal distress.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. Wait, Shark Tank?
Jesus.
Good watch.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
Oh, that one gets an award. Yeah, that one gets
all right,
an award.
Jeff. Politician Kevin Spacey retires to Wisconsin, where he opens a cheese restaurant.
Wait, say again?
Politician Kevin Spacey retires to Wisconsin, where he opens a cheese restaurant.
House of Curds.
Yeah.
Nice. To Nick. Fred Savage remembers his childhood in a family of friendly grizzlies.
The Wonder Bears.
For Sarah. Kirsten Ritter does stand-up.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Kristen Ritter
does stand-up.
Oh, Jesus. I was like, don't trust the J. No, it's Jessica Jokes.
Jessica Jokes. Tara.
You.
Lisa Kudrow stockpiles frozen sperm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Aw.
Yeah.
Aw. Uh-huh. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Okay, this one could get real wrong real quick.
Wait a minute.
Lisa Kudrow stockpiles frozen sperm.
The cum bank.
Oh, no.
My dad listens to this.
Wow.
This is the end of dog racing.
We are calling the police, sir.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Wow. All right. Taking us into our third score break, question 45 for two. Secret agent Bruce Boxleitner.
Leitner?
Leitner?
Yep.
Teams up with an enormous lady gorilla. This one goes out to a friend of the show, Linda Holmes.
Wait, Scarecrow and Mrs. Kong?
You are correct. Oh, let's hear the scores.
Okay, Nick has 7, Jeff has 8, Sarah and Joe and I each have 9.
All right. Everybody has 2 questions left.
Okay.
Starting with Jeff. Kim, yes. Courtney, and somebody else.
Chloe.
Thank you. Wrap themselves head to toe in seaweed.
All right. Oh, God. Kelping up with the Kardashians.
Amazing.
Wow. That was beautiful.
I'd like to, I have to give a shout out to my wife for watching that show. Otherwise,
nice.
Maybe it wouldn't be top of mind.
Or Nick. Meredith must conduct an autopsy on the oldest Brady son and catalog his internal organs.
Oh, wow.
Greg's anatomy.
Ew.
To Sarah. Maggie and Emma have a little game. Maggie pretends to be an Appaloosa and Emma is a Clydesdale.
I'm really glad this didn't go in a nitpicking direction. Playing horse.
For Tara.
You mean playing louse?
Yeah. Thank you.
Ted Danson opens a bottomless bar for butt admirers.
Come on, man. Cheeks.
That's not so bad.
Yeah.
It's not as bad as it could be now,
Jeff.
No.
Yeah.
He did, in his defense.
Yes.
For that question, he provided an alternate in case I thought that was too gross for the show. I do not.
Uh-huh.
You got to keep that explicit tag going, guys. It's how we keep the podcast from getting too popular. Explicit limit our audience. To Joe. Swiffer wet jets learn choreographed routines.
Ew.
Swiffer wet jets
learn choreographed routines.
Wow.
Tough one.
I feel like it's mop, but I can't fit mop into.
Oh, can I?
No. Not till Joe answers.
I don't have it. I don't know.
All right, Nick.
Mop rock?
Nope.
Oh.
Dance mops.
Oh. Nice, though. I was going to go dance mops.
That's the correct answer.
Dance mops.
Oh, that's
correct.
It. Dance mops. Dance mops. Damn it.
Sarah could
sure.
I was going.
You knew it.
I was going
okay.
Another way.
Last question for Jeff. They're zombies and they just can't They're zombies and they just can't stop touching themselves down there.
Oh.
Jesus Christ, Hartman.
Oh,
my God, man.
Oh, no.
I'm so proud that I get to be the one to say the next 3 words. The Wanking Dead.
Yes.
All right, for Nick. Shamar Moore and Joe Mantegna are furry creatures who don't want to be made into coats, and they're up to no good.
Criminal minx.
Criminal minx. Okay, it is Sarah's go. Sarah, Tom Selleck and Donnie Wahlberg bleach their hair and hold their breath.
Bleach the hair. I'm sorry, can you read it again?
Tom Selleck and Donnie Wahlberg bleach their hair and hold their breath.
I see.
Okay. It. Blue. Oh, it's something with blue bloods, and I don't know which word it's at, and I keep wanting to say blue rinse. That's not correct.
Sarah.
I don't know.
Sending you the.
I know. I don't know. I don't know.
Tara.
Blue Blondes?
Blue Blondes.
Oh, Blondes. Damn it.
Yeah. All right, Tara, I believe you can clinch the game with the right answer here.
Yep.
Paunch and John are getting a little flabby around the jawline. Paunch and John are getting a little flabby around the jawline.
Damn it.
Calling it. Wow. What? That was an easy one, too.
I know it's chins, but I don't know what the word is.
Chins.
Chins!
I forgot the word for chins. That's what it was.
Oh, all right. No.
Interesting. All right.
Yeah.
Joe.
Yes.
Vicky, Tamara, and Gretchen have flippers, blubber, and luxurious brown fur.
Wait, one more time?
Yeah, Vicky, Tamara, and Gretchen have flippers, blubber, and luxurious brown fur.
Come on.
Flippers, blubber, and luxurious brown fur. It's the Real Housewives. Oh, where is this?
Yeah.
I'm not getting the animal.
I'm psychically sending it to you too.
Me too. Oh,
sorry.
All three Anybody? Of you.
We all got each other.
The
Seal Housewives?
The Seal.
Oh, the
Housewives.
Seal.
Ooh, ooh. The
I was on Walrus for whatever dumb candy. Reason.
Vicky.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, you're going to have to need a score break. I'm thoroughly confused where we are.
Okay, Nick and Joe are now tied with 9 each. Jeff and Sarah and I are tied with 10.
Well, it just so happens that I have a tiebreaker
Thank
for
God.
Us.
Thank God.
So I have 2. So in case we get a tie on the first one, we can proceed to a second tiebreaker.
Okay, so this is just for me, Jeff, and Sarah?
Yep.
Okay.
All right, so.
And we just yell it out?
Yell it out when you know it, okay?
Okay.
As soon as you answer, you're done until the other people answer. Here we go. Captain Steubing has an inappropriate relationship with a head-butting barnyard friend.
Love goat.
Jeff with the love goat.
Nice.
Here you go, Jeff.
Value guess.
Nicely done. Hey, do you want to do that other tiebreaker for Le Shits Avec Giggles?
Yeah.
All right. So in case you didn't hear all over the shouting, the correct answer on the tiebreaker was the love goat.
I was like, the love boar? Not correct.
There is Bob Hartman owning the love boat.
Yep.
Ilana and Abby make sourdough, ciabatta, and naan.
Bread City.
Nice. Yep.
Yeah.
What an amazing game.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much.
Oh,
that
my
was
God.
Awesome. So much fun. Well, so good. Much fun.
All right, everybody. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot. Great. We did something with Game of Thrones before leaving Westeros. I forgot to fill that part in my notes. And traveling around the dial with stops at Better Call Saul, Happy Valley, Houdini and Doyle, Silicon Valley, Project Runway All-Stars, and a couple more ads of the 80s or maybe 90s. Angie surprised us all with a 2-year-old black light attack for the cannon, but was defeated on the battlefield. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and playing for value guests, Jeff was the winner of this week's game time.
Drake!
Remember!
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
shame!
Sarah D. Bunting. All right, Joe
Shark
Reed.
Tank, I'm sorry.
Real Housewives of Walrus County Woodwork.
Nick Ridewell Jones.
Every crone was someone's daughter.
And Jeff Drake.
Aw, get it, crone.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Green.
Oh, Pete, that's later. Maybe we'll be dead by then.
Oh, that'd be great.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.